Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday, February 17th. Let's see, taking a look at the weather. We've got 26 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Some snow showers coming down, and we've got some snow showers continuing today. Forecast today, calling for a winter storm warning now through 5 a.m. Thursday morning, with snow showers today, 3 to 5 inches, expected high about 34, 23 with heavy snow overnight with 6 to 10 inches possible. More snow tomorrow on Wednesday with 5 to 9 inches possible, expected high about 30. Temperatures dropping though by Wednesday night. We're back into the single digits for the overnight low. Wednesday night, 1 to 3 inches, with Thursday a high of just 27 with maybe half an inch possible, a little bit more, maybe an inch or so on Thursday night, with a couple more inches forecast for Friday. Again, single digits Wednesday night, down to 12 on Thursday night, back down to 9 on Friday night. Again, with snowflakes in the forecast all the way through. Heber City, 31 degrees, again, with that winter storm warning also in effect through Thursday at 5 a.m. We've got 1 to 3 inches possible with expected high today of about 40, with more snow tonight, maybe 1 to 3 inches, 3 to 5 inches possible on Wednesday. More snow on Thursday as well. We'll be back with the avalanche forecast report right after this. And taking a look now in the backcountry, on the phone with us, we've got Brooke from the Utah Avalanche Center. Good morning, Brooke.
Morning, Leslie. Yeah, we're continuing into our second day of an avalanche watch, meaning that we expect dangerous avalanche conditions to form in the next 24 to 48 hours. In Park City, you know, we have lower snow totals, but we can expect, as you said, another 3 to 6 inches by the sunset tonight. And while that's not too much snow, it's falling on top of a pretty weak snowpack. You're going to be able to trigger these avalanches of wind-drifted snow at near ridgelines on mid and upper elevation slopes, particularly facing west through north through east. And we have that nasty, persistent weak layer that's being buried mostly for the first time right now. So we're concerned about that, and we're at a considerable avalanche danger on those slopes for the day.
Okay, Brooke, thanks. Mm-hmm. People can find out more, of course, by going on to utahavalanchecenter.org. KPCW News Time, 8:09. It's 8:10. Good morning. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaum with a preview of this week's county council meeting. KUER government reporter Sean Higgins will be on the line with an update of this year's legislative session to date. And from Recycle Utah, Executive Director Andy Heck and Education Director Chelsea Hafer with the latest from the Recycling Center. Then stay tuned for This Green Earth. Today's guest includes middle school teacher and author Ellen Cochran, who has just penned a new book titled Follow the Water, the unbelievable true story of a teenager's survival in the Amazon. The book describes the harrowing story of a 17-year-old who survived a plane crash over the Amazon jungle. Cochran shares more about her connection to Peru and what led her to become an advocate for the rainforest. So there's the connection to This Green Earth. All of that, of course, happening on This Green Earth every Tuesday. You can hear This Green Earth at 9 a.m. Well, locals can learn more about plans for a new Wasatch County government building at an open house that's taking place today. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details about this $47 million project.
Plans for a new Wasatch County administration building have been in the works since 2022. Leaders say county staff have outgrown the current facility on Main Street, which was built nearly 60 years ago as a courthouse and county jail. Some departments, such as planning and engineering staff, are scattered across other buildings around the county. A new building is planned for the corner of State Route 113 and Southfield Road. It will consolidate more staff and services under one roof, including county council chambers, all administrative departments, a Department of Motor Vehicles office, and space for Heber Valley Tourism and Economic Development. The new building will also provide better accessibility for people with mobility disabilities. People can learn more about the plans at an open house Tuesday from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Wasatch County Library. Construction costs will be roughly $47.5 million. About half that amount will be paid for using a bond. For more information about the bond, visit kpcw.org. In addition to the open house, there's a public hearing for the bond at the Wasatch County Council meeting Wednesday. The county plans to begin construction this spring and finish the new government building by the end of 2027. The county says it will work with Heber City to turn the old building into public open space. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Wasatch County Council, as we mentioned, meets tomorrow in work session starting at 4 o'clock. And on the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, let's start with that. On the agenda for Wednesday's meeting, a public hearing on the issuance of not more than $45 million in lease revenue bonds and refunding bonds. So again, this money is for this admin building as well as kind of consolidating some outstanding bonds.
Yeah, so in 2024, Wasatch County bonded to do the extension to the courthouse project in Heber. So this is just located next to the sheriff's office and the Heber Valley Hospital. We are able to save about $1.3 million in interest expense by refinancing these loans. So while Grace said in your report that half of these funds are for the administration building coming from the bonds, the other half of the bonds is going to repay this court debt so that we can get a lower interest rate.
Okay, my understanding from the agenda item is that these are lease revenue bonds. So why a lease revenue bond, which tends to have higher interest rates than just, say, a general obligation bond? Wouldn't this just come from the general fund anyway?
Yeah, so a lease revenue bond is a very common mechanism that local governments use not just general property taxes, but any revenue source. The disadvantage to a general obligation bond, you are right, general obligation bonds have lower interest rates, but they also are obligated to be on property taxes. So property taxpayers have to pay the debt service to that. By using a lease revenue bond, we're instead able to rely on other revenue sources that are things like the sales taxes and use taxes that we're generating out of the Deer Valley East Village area and other sales taxes as they grow. A lease revenue bond is a little bit of a funny structure. You'll notice those things are noticed under a municipal building authority. The public hearing that we're holding is all part of the process of issuing those bonds using a municipal building authority. And again, this is how I would estimate the majority of government buildings are built across the state of Utah.
Okay, so it gives you greater flexibility, it sounds like, in repaying the bond. Have you kind of run those numbers, though? I mean, is it cost savings as well?
Yeah, so there is a higher interest rate cost. I mean, we don't ultimately know the exact interest rate cost until we actually issue the bonds. Well, won't be for a couple weeks now. But we feel like overall this provides the best path in preserving the flexibility as the county continues to grow to know exactly what we're doing. For instance, I believe Summit County issued a revenue bond. This is a very slightly nuanced thing, but you're dedicating a specific revenue source. It doesn't necessarily have to be property tax. It could be something else. But what a lease revenue bond is allows us to just dedicate any revenue source as we go, not a specific one.
Okay. Also in the meeting Wednesday, the council will discuss and consider Heber Valley's EIS comment submission. This is the environmental impact statement for the Heber Valley bypass. Is the county okay with what the city submitted?
Yeah, actually, if you look at what the staff recommended as comments, there's a lot of overlap between what Heber City submitted and Wasatch County did. What is on the agenda for tomorrow is actually some additional considerations the County Council would like to make, arguments around preservation of open space and agricultural features of the North Fields and impacts to water and other things like that.
Mm-hmm. So has the county sent off its letter to UDOT?
Yeah, so the council authorized basically the first round of those comments as recommended by staff. And then they intend to submit an additional comment that would include these other factors.
Hmm. Okay, so have you had any response from UDOT at this point?
No, the standard process is that UDOT will respond, and they are actually obligated by law to respond to comments, but they'll do it in aggregate with any other comment that they receive. So as members of the public, other organizations make comments to UDOT, UDOT is aggregating those. And then if there are identical comments, they can respond to those in a group. But if there are unique comments, they have to address those items individually.
Okay, so what's next with that? The comment period ends, I think, in March sometime.
And yeah, March 9th.
And then what?
So from there, UDOT will have to compile all of the comments they receive, provide responses to those comments, and then draft what will be the final EIS. So right now we have the draft EIS, and they're required to incorporate things that are identified in the comment section to whatever extent they were not already incorporated in the EIS document. And then that will be published, we hope, sometime later this year, maybe late summer or early fall is kind of my estimate.
Okay. All right. Wanted to jump back to the Olympics, certainly taking the headlines these days. And it sounds like the only one from Wasatch County who attended the Olympic Games in Italy is Dallin Kosher from the Heber Valley Chamber. Why did Wasatch County decide not to send anybody?
I think we felt like our time is best spent focusing on local resources. I think we have a pretty good sense of where we need to go. And I don't know that the operations-specific implications of the Milan-Cortina Olympics are going to have a huge impact on what we do come, you know, 2034. I think we have another opportunity to decide whether we want to participate in the French Alps Olympics 4 years from now. But overall, I think we feel like we're on a good track. We feel like we know what we're doing. And I don't know necessarily that we felt like there was a significant enough benefit to send a larger group to be able to learn some of those lessons that we can learn from some of the other partners and other stakeholders who are going.
Mm-hmm. So you do think you will maybe make plans to go to the 2030 games in France?
Yeah, I don't know that, you know, but it is a possibility.
Sure. And were you here for the 2002 Olympics?
I was not, but we have a fair number of community members and even staff members who were. And, you know, it's very different because particularly in Wasatch County, Soldier Hollow was new for the 2002 Winter Olympics, whereas now it's been in operation for an excess of two decades. And I think we're excited about the prospect of really not necessarily the Olympics itself, but what the Olympics can represent in terms of investment in what we would consider kind of necessary infrastructure improvements. For instance, transit and transportation issues, I think, are top of that list.
Mm-hmm. And certainly that's where the bypass comes into effect, as well as some of the plan changes for US 40 as well, right? Making that four lanes.
Yeah, I think all of those things are certainly on UDOT's mind. Top of ours is, you know, I think by 2034, we'd like to have a transit center, park and ride, better local circulation to make sure that we can get people in and out. And I know Heber City and Midway City are both very interested in doing what they can to capture, you know, the interest of these visitors. I think there was an overall sense that we did a really good job of getting people getting in and out in 2002. What we'd like to do a little better this time is figure out how to get them to stay and take advantage of, you know, the businesses and the amenities that exist here in Wasatch County.
Okay. We are more than halfway through the legislative session. Anything jumping out at you at this point?
Oh, there's always things. I think this time, you know, Wasatch County, Summit County, and Tooele County engaged on a bill just this last week that we were able to kind of you know, adjust some of the impacts of it. Often these types of bills tend to be land use or governance bills. There are some right now that we don't know, you know, to what degree they're going to pass as they are or with modifications. So there are bills that affect, you know, what rezoning process looks like or what the approvals would look like for affordable housing or small lots or things like that. There's also a lot of bills around property taxes, limits, restrictions, or directions or changes to that process. And again, because there are so many, it's hard to know exactly which one's going to rise to the top as the priority at the legislative level. So we're watching just to try and see and provide input on how we could see these things working.
Mm-hmm. Now, does the county provide any kind of bill tracker for residents?
No, we don't specifically. We largely rely on others' bill trackers. I think the Utah League of Cities and Towns does a really good job of publishing publicly bills that are of interest to local governments. We also rely on the League of Special Service Districts and Utah or the Utah Association of Counties. I don't believe their bill tracking is public, but that's where kind of we rely on those sources.
All right. Let's see, we reported last week that three preliminary municipality petitions were filed for Wasatch County. So at this point, only Wasatch Highlands and Bear Canyon, which is closer to the Sundance Resort, are being considered since they filed first. So what's your reaction to the Wasatch Highlands application? This is something that you looked at last year, I know.
Yeah, they actually gave us advance warning that they were intending to pursue a preliminary municipality. And we've actually talked about it very briefly in a couple of our meetings in early January. So I'm not entirely surprised by it. I think my understanding is that they didn't know for sure whether they were one of those first, because there's limits in the state about how many that they can create. I think it's two or three.
Yeah,
maybe it's only two. And so I think no one knew until this weekend which two those would be. I am surprised to see that there were two other ones in Wasatch County. I was not aware of those. I know that the property owner in Provo Canyon has had ambitions to develop that property. That hasn't been in alignment with the direction the council felt. You know, some of our preservation zones, we wanted to keep them as they were. And this is something that I think is always going to be at issue, is counties tend to be more rural, more spread out, and our focus is on those lower density areas. And the state seems interested in pursuing more aggressive growth than what counties are naturally geared for.
Yeah. So the Wasatch Highlands application, it looks like it's for about 3,500 acres of property east of Heber City, but not contiguous to Heber City. And last year, the Heber City Council declined to move forward with the annexation after Wasatch County had asked them not to amend the city's annexation map. So did that go anywhere?
Yeah, so actually preliminary municipalities are required to have at least a quarter mile buffer from another municipality. So they couldn't be contiguous if they were to incorporate using this process. Wasatch County largely has been working with the same developer on the State Institutional Trust Land Administration. So this is CITLA. This is property owned by a state entity that has some level of authority and preemption. And so rather than battle them on that, we have focused on it. So that's where we've been working, you know, for the last, I don't know, maybe 8 months on 144 units adjacent to this preliminary municipality. This preliminary municipality is on private property that is adjacent to CITLA and was part of the annexation petition to Heber City along with the CITLA piece. But we have not had any detailed discussions about it. Largely the direction from the council has been our preferences to leave it as is or only make very minor modifications. So where we haven't seen the details of the preliminary municipality until today or this weekend, I haven't had the chance to talk with my council about, you know, overall, I think we'd like to work with the developer and find a way to work in the county. I don't know if exactly what they have planned, though, is something that the county council is going to support.
Mm-hmm. And I guess critics say that this bill that was approved back in 2024 session gives landowners just a way of skirting local scrutiny and pursuing their development initiatives on unincorporated land by converting their projects into new cities. So how do you feel about this?
I think there's no doubt that local governments feel like this is a direct threat to local land use authority. I mean, I know Moab area, they are in litigation challenging the constitutionality of this law. We feel like local governments are equipped to evaluate not just individual property rights owners. I mean, that's the whole reason local governments exist, right? Is to mediate between property owners. When one property owner can overwrite that mediation, I think it presents a lot of challenges. And that's why we're interested, I think, in negotiating to see if there is something that can be mutually beneficial rather than exclusively beneficial to a single property owner.
Yeah, last year, our representative Mike Kohler proposed House Bill 540, which would have halted the authority to create these new preliminary municipalities, but it died in the Senate. Has he talked about trying to refile something like that this year?
Yeah, well, there has been talk, and he's mentioned to me an effort to I think he felt like the message was dissolve or removing this entirely was a bridge too far for the legislature, but they did seem open to increasing the barrier to entry, increasing the level of effort that needs to go into ensuring that these things are viable and feasible. For instance, in this area, there are really significant infrastructure challenges that, you know, may present insurmountable issues for any type of development, whether it's with the county or in a preliminary municipality. And those are the types of things that if you could do that work in advance, I think you could end up, addressing some of those concerns far in advance of, you know, a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of effort.
Mm. Okay. Anything else, Dustin, you wanted to mention?
No, not this morning.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:29 on this Tuesday morning. It's Mardi Gras and the start of the Chinese Lunar New Year, Year of the Horse. I'm Leslie Thatcher. And on the phone with an update from the Utah legislature, I have KUR reporter Sean Higgins. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's just start with a recap from last week. Tell us, give us a summation of what happened.
You know, I think the biggest thing that happened last week as far as legislation moving through the process, we had this bill, HB 392, which would create a special layer of the court system to only hear challenges to state law. I know you and I have talked about this in past weeks, but this is a bill that has really evolved since it was first introduced. So just to give people a recap, when it was first introduced, it would have created an entirely new court in Utah, similar to like how we have a juvenile court or a drug court or a business and chancellery court. They would create a special constitutional court that would be made up of three judges whose sole job would be to see challenges to state laws that lawmakers make. This made a lot of people in the legal community very nervous about separation of powers. You hear this term a lot of basically venue shopping or basically selecting, being very selective of where your specific cases are heard to get a favorable outcome toward you. And as this moved through the process and was picked up by the Senate really made some pretty serious changes to this. So instead of creating a new court, there is going to be a layer of the judicial system that does see these special cases, so challenges to state law, but we are not creating new judges to do it. And that's pretty important. So as it works right now, and this was signed, passed by the Senate and signed by the governor late on Friday. So this was a very new development and is now state law. So how this works now is, say, someone in Park City or a group of people in Park City were to sue the state over a law that they said was unconstitutional. Instead of that being heard at the district court level, as it is now, it will be gone to this constitutional panel, which is made up of three judges, but three judges that are already part of the existing pool of district court judges. So the legislature would not be nominating and confirming new judges to hear these special cases. And there was a lot of chatter about conflict of interest there, about how can a party to a lawsuit also be the one picking the judges to see these lawsuits. So that eliminates some of that because it's picking from an existing pool of judges. The bar still said this is creates some interesting problems as far as the independence of the judiciary just because of the nature of these cases. But as it stands right now, that's the law of the land. And that was really the biggest thing to me that came out of last week, and the biggest thing that will have a big impact on some of these cases going forward.
Okay, and it sounds like the issue of abortion is back.
Yeah, that one is an interesting one. So let me pull up that bill right now. This is from Representative Nicolene Peck. She's a Republican in Tooele County. And there's a real sense, she's written bills to go after Planned Parenthood in the past. She had a bill last year that banned Planned Parenthood from teaching sex ed in public school. She's going after the use of Medicaid funds to pay for treatments at Planned Parenthood, whether it's family planning or not. My colleague Hugo Ricard Bell did a story on this, spoke with Representative Peck, and basically it's her belief that there has to be some sort of shady business going on because it's Planned Parenthood. She's a very conservative Republican, Representative Peck. This bill is moving through the process right now. It is still in the Rules Committee, so that I take all of this with a giant pinch of salt. There are a lot of bills that grab headlines every single year, and they never make it out of Rules Committee. So I'm not saying that this isn't going to go anywhere, but I'm not saying that it is going to go anywhere either. So, and basically this one, if I didn't say already, would prohibit Planned Parenthood from being a qualified Medicaid provider. So if you are getting your health insurance through Medicaid, you can no longer go to Planned Parenthood. And Planned Parenthood does a lot of services outside of abortion. I think they're say that the vast majority of what they do has nothing to do with abortion. They're doing many other things in the healthcare space.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about House Senate Bill 242. This deals with some transportation amendments.
Yeah, so this one was a big focus last week by a lot of people in Salt Lake City, and that is because it really singles out the city in many different ways, particularly how it uses its streets. So this is the Omnibus Transportation Bill, Senate Bill 242. I'm counting the number of lines right now. I count 3,350 lines of text in this bill right now, and nestled in toward the end. In the original version, it would have required Salt Lake City to effectively dismantle a lot of its dedicated bike and bus lanes on some of the busiest streets in the city. So that would be things like 300 West, 200 South, and 400 South in Salt Lake City. If anyone has gone to the Costco in Salt Lake City on the corner of like 2100 and 300, that bike lane and bus infrastructure there, some people say that would have had to have come out because, according to some constituents who had lobbied the legislature, it's clogging up traffic and hurting business. So that bill has evolved a little bit. I'm hearing that that provision of the bill has been taken out, but the state would still be inserting itself into how the city manages some of its roads, as far as classifying neighborhood roads up to these main thoroughfares, think State Street, 700 West, basically main arteries from the airport through the city, things like that, as certain regionally significant roads, and would allow the state to come in and have some more oversight there. And that makes a lot of people pretty nervous, especially some cities and towns across the state when it comes to the balance between state and local control. We are in a very red state. Small government is a big tagline here, but I think it's important for people to remember that when we talk about separation of powers, the only real legal binding separation of powers is between the Senate, is between the states and the federal government. The separation of powers between the states and local government, that's really a handshake agreement, and the state is granting all of these powers to cities and counties across the state just because they want to. And so they do have the ability to come in and change a lot of these things. So this is a bill that is still making its way through the process. I'm looking at the status right now. It is still on the Senate floor. It made out of Senate committee last week. And so there's still chances that this could change quite significantly as it goes through the process. I said this is the omnibus transportation bill. This is not something that they rush through. This is one that will probably be iterated on for a good while before we finally get the final version that heads to Governor Cox. So this one could change quite a bit.
Okay. Any updates with affordable housing?
You know, that was another one that we were looking at last week. Representative Ray Ward has a bill to essentially make it easier for people to build houses on smaller lots throughout the state. And that one made a lot of people in the local government community pretty nervous as well, because zoning and land use is a very big power that local governments have. I know everyone in Park City knows that all too well with all the big fights over the base of Park City and any affordable housing project. Like, the zoning piece of that is a key piece of any one of those discussions. And this would have relaxed some of that a little bit. So it would allow essentially someone who has a piece of land, say it's zoned for, I don't know, you need to a single family home can only go on a lot that's a quarter acre or bigger. It can't be smaller than a quarter acre. And they want to build on an eighth of an acre. This bill would essentially give the city the ability to approve that without having to rezone the whole zone. This one has some support in the building community. Governor Cox has a very ambitious housing bill that, or housing goal, I should say, that has support behind measures like this. But like I said, local governments are really protective of this zoning and land use power. So at the end of the committee last week, they decided to hold it. And that doesn't mean it's dead, but it doesn't mean it's going to be breezing through the process either. So this one could change, could be a little more palatable to local governments as we head through the process. But as of right now, being held is not a great sign. And another housing related bill I'm looking at as well, this would be HB 492, Transportation Infrastructure and Housing Amendments. It's by Representative Calvin Roberts in Salt Lake County and Senator Kirk Cullimore in Salt Lake County as well, who's the Senate Majority Leader. And this bill would essentially allow, it would open up a funding mechanism for cities and towns to get a low-cost loan from the state to build essential infrastructure. We hear this stat all the time that there are tens of thousands of empty housing lots throughout the state that just are waiting to be built. But the caveat there is that they are also devoid of any infrastructure. There's no electricity, there's no water, there's no sewer. And that is a really big expense for a local government to build that infrastructure out so that there can be houses or businesses built in that area. And so this bill would open up a funding mechanism for a low-cost loan from the state for a city, a town, a county to put that infrastructure in and theoretically be able to put more lower-cost homes in those areas. This one is something that I heard has a lot of support from both chambers and leadership. Obviously, the Senate Majority Leader is putting his name on this, so the Senate is on board. I heard from the mouth of House Majority Leader Casey Snyder that he's a big fan of this bill as well. It is still, it's been assigned to a committee right now, so it's moving through the process, but is yet to be heard in that committee. So this is another one that's housing related and possibly relevant to your listeners in the Wasatch back as well that we're going to be watching really closely.
Okay, and another bill, as you mentioned, where I believe it is being held is House Bill 490, which is sponsored by Representative Doug Owens, basically water optimization reporting amendments. It sounds like a venture into trying to find out how much water we are using for agriculture.
Yeah, so this bill, Representative Doug Owens usually runs a number of water-related bills throughout the session. Doug Owens is a Democrat from Salt Lake County and runs quite a few of these water bills. Some of them get going, some of them don't. A lot of his bills are focused on these water reporting. And as I'm reading this right now, it would require organizations like the Division of Water Resources to study water diversions in agriculture and non-agricultural use and just determine how much we are actually using. And that's a big, talking with water lawyers, water experts throughout the state, that is a really hard number to actually put a pin in. There are water rights that are vested throughout the state of how much water someone can and can't use, but how much water they're actually using, that is a little bit harder to do because I think in an agricultural sense, you're losing quite a bit of water to evaporation and things that might evaporate before it even gets to your field and before it even gets to a water meter where you are watching these things. Mm-hmm. And talking with water experts, they've done a lot of these tinkering with things like metering and things of this nature over the last 4 years. 2022 was what was called the year of water at the legislature. And really what we're in the point of right now is we're starting to see some of those changes bear fruit now and doing some changes and tinkering with what exists already. So I think maybe part of this is because Doug Owens is a Democrat and a Republican supermajority and his bills maybe have a harder time getting through. It does say something that they didn't just kill it outright and they held it. I'm unsure of what they held it for, but that says that there is an appetite to potentially move this forward if a few things change in the language of the bill. So this is another one, not dead yet, but being held isn't necessarily a good sign.
Okay, finally, just wanted to ask you about the budget, because that's really what they're there for, is to approve the next fiscal year's budget. The call was for a 5% cut across state government. So has that been achieved?
Well, we will find out later this week. I think on Thursday morning, the Executive Appropriations Committee is going to be presenting their base budget. That's something they do in week five of the legislature. So we have the most up-to-date revenue forecasts for the coming year. We will have these proposed 5% cut across the state government entities, and then they will propose the first draft, essentially, of the budget, of the base budget for the next fiscal year. So this is one where, I mean, this is talking with people as well, especially in higher ed, they had to do this last year as well. And so they're just going through this process again. It's tedious. No one really likes figuring out where you can cut 5% across your budget. But it's something the state really wants to do. And another element of this is the state is getting, I think it's about $300 million fewer in federal funds because of the big, beautiful bill. A lot of that was rescissions on funding, at the state level. And Utah is going to be about $300 million short. So state lawmakers are looking for ways to kind of pad the budget, make up that shortfall. And we'll find out on Thursday whether they have achieved that or not.
Okay. Hey, Sean Higgins, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Sean Higgins is a reporter for KUR Radio in Salt Lake City. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. In the studio now with an update from Recycle Utah, I have Executive Director Andy Heck, along with Education Director Chelsea Hafer. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chelsea. And good morning, Leslie.
First up, Andy, let's get an update on the new facility. What's happening there?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on. It's really moving quickly now. We know the land... the 4 acres out by Home Depot have officially transferred from Summit County to Park City. And now we're in discussions with Park City to bring the contract out that transfers that land to us so we can go ahead and move our recycling facility and education facility onto that land.
What is that? I don't understand why it had to be transferred to the city first.
It was some technicalities on what happens if we don't succeed, where does that land go. It was done in the right way, so our elected officials knew what they were doing, did it right, and we will end up benefiting with a wonderful facility on that land here soon.
Okay, so what's the timeline going forward here?
Well, we're looking at a bunch of different options. We are committed to not closing our doors during this process. So what that means is looking for some temporary solution on that land. I had a great meeting with Summit County Planning Department and the feasibility of doing a temporary structure, either a tent like what High Valley Transit had, in collaboration with a barn that we have access to that we own, will give us enough space and working on that site to continue our current operations we have today and also allow us to phase the construction to go into the future with our plans.
Okay, so how do you envision, I mean, the new center? What's this facility going to allow besides what you do today?
Yeah, well, it allows us to double what we're doing today, right? We lean in, we have this amazing community facility. Yes, we recycle material, we take in all sorts of material from batteries to aluminum, and we make sure it's being processed the right way. We're sending that out to facilities around the way. But one of the strongest components we have is an amazing educational outreach program. And this is part of something that Recycle Utah does incredibly well. We've been doing it for a very long time. And I think it's an undertold story of our impact in this community. And to talk a little bit more about that, Chelsea's here, our education director, who does this amazing program of community outreach and education.
Hi, Chelsea.
Hi, how's it going?
Doing well. Well, we had heard earlier that you had like 7,000 students that you go and visit every year.
Yeah, so we do. We have 7,000 students that we engage with. Some of those we engage with 2-3 times a year. Some of them actually more like 5 to 10, depending on what camps and after-school programs they're in. But yeah, we try and make ourselves known in the Park City schools and in the Summit County schools and reach kids as many times as we can.
So is that you headed out to the schools? Or
yeah.
Do you have a team? Or?
Yeah, so right now it's mostly me. My coworker Mia also comes with me. It used to be me and Mary. So yeah, Mary established this incredible education program and relationships with the schools and teachers. And yeah, I feel very lucky to be such a trusted resource in these schools.
Yeah, so what's the curriculum?
So we try and align all of our curriculum to the standards, whether that's the social studies or science standards for each grade, and then connect that to lessons that are relevant to Recycle Utah. So anything sustainability, we teach about water, we teach about energy, we teach about recycling and waste, obviously, composting. And then when we get up through 5th, 6th, 7th grade, it becomes a little bit more theoretical and problem solving, teaching critical thinking skills on how to solve some of these big environmental issues that we're facing.
Mm-hmm. So is that, do you stop at 7th grade or do you go all the way into the high school?
We are hoping to teach through the CTE classes this year in 8th grade. We have not taught in the high schools. It's harder to get in there. But yeah, by the time that these kids are graduating from Ecker, they will have had, I did the math the other day, and I think it's 20 different lessons from Recycle Utah between kindergarten and eighth grade, and that's not including things over the summer or after school.
Yeah, so how does it work? I mean, teachers just make time for you to...
Yeah, it depends. So, we have relationships with a lot of the teachers in the elementary schools and at Ecker, and then we also have great relationships with the counselors who teach the healthy lifestyles programs at the elementary schools. And so right now, I have been teaching each elementary school every single class. So already taught all of Parley's and all of McPullen. Next week I start at Trailside and then going right into Jeremy Ranch. And so the counselors are awesome and they schedule every class for us, where in 2 weeks we're able to reach every single classroom in the school.
Okay, so you kind of go and stay and then just do class after class.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so how do you hope to expand that going forward?
Yeah, I think it's, the school programs are so awesome. I always talk about it, we're lucky to have a captive audience in the kids, where we can't really get that with adults. And the goal, obviously, is so that they can bring these things home and become teachers in their own homes, and provide all of the education that we provide to them and pass that information along to their parents. But I think we, having a new space, are going to have the opportunity to really expand our adult education program. So we've been having a lot of really awesome conversations about workshops that we can provide. We also are hoping to collaborate with some of the other environmental education organizations that work in Summit County, and collaborate to maybe have after school programs and leadership programs for youth in the sustainability field. So yeah, I'm super excited. I think having our own space is gonna provide a lot of transparency in the recycling process, and also just really expand the educational programming that we're able to do.
Yeah, so your current offices are what, maybe 600 square feet or something?
Yeah, roughly.
And so you hope to double that then, so you would have more kind of these community rooms?
Yeah, our current plan is to have the upstairs of the office area be a big multi-purpose room that's education space, event space, board meeting space, big enough to host our green drinks program, which Chelsea also runs. And that's kind of the difficulty we're having right now with designing this facility is, how big do we need the space? What do we need in terms of our warehouse or store? How much do we need in storage? So we're going through, we're working with an architect. We have an amazing architectural design board that's helping us, some great local talent in developing and design work. So we're really pulling this all together and looking. Right now we're in a phase that I'm calling the strategic partnership phase, where we're reaching out to all these other amazing organizations, from EAT to Wasteless Solutions to Vail to everyone that has a stakeholder with us, and find out, hey, what can our facility do to make what you're doing even better? How do we collaborate and make this place great?
Yeah. So back to you, Chelsea, then. Again, so the adult education that Recycle Utah provides is through that green drinks program. Do you intend to expand that as well?
Yeah. So I think the format of green drinks right now is perfect. If you haven't been, we have one on March 10th, and it's really wonderful. We talk about a different topic every time and get local experts to come and educate us on things that we know nothing about that are in the sustainability field. So I think I'm not super inclined to change that, just because it works so well. It sells out basically every time. And I think that what's exciting is to think about different programs that we can add. So I've really wanted to create some sort of program that's more of a conversation circle, so that people can share stories and exchange resources, and it's more of an open conversation. And then I think a lot of workshops, so making your own beeswax wraps. Here's how small businesses can recycle glass. Here's how to make candles in jars that you already have. Things like that I think would be really exciting. And we have, you know, we have staff that know how to do so many of these different things and could teach these workshops on their own. And yeah, I think that's something that I'm really excited about.
Okay, what's the topic for the March 10th Green Drinks?
It's going to be on electronics and battery recycling, and it will be at Miners Hospital. And the tickets for that are on our website, recycleutah.org/events. And I would get them very quickly because I have not marketed it at all, and it's almost halfway sold out. So these sell out really quickly. So I would urge people to go take a look at that if you're interested.
Heard it here first. Green drinks tickets are on sale.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
Yeah. Hazardous Waste Material Collection Day, April 25th in the Silver King lot. All of us have old paint, batteries, electronics kicking around our house that need to get out. These are very dangerous. These should not go in the landfill. April 25th at Silver King lot. Bring your leftover paint and other hazardous materials, and we will take those.
And it's free for Summit County residents. They will ask you for an ID to show that you're a Summit County resident, and we do not accept any business waste at these.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
See you next month. That's Sandy Heck and Chelsea Hafer with Recycle Utah. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.